With Ross Reynolds, I'm Marcy Silman. Lately, politicians have started to pay a bit more attention to the ongoing wage gap between men and women.
You wouldn't like it if you were forced to work every fourth day without pay. Men would be complaining about that. They wouldn't think that was equal or fair. So this is the 21st century. It's time to close that gap.
President Obama, just after signing two executive orders aimed at closing that wage gap, but it's not the only one in the country. A new analysis released by the AFL-CIO, the nation's largest labor union, suggests the gap between American CEOs and their employees has grown larger, too. And here to talk about this and other news, John Talton, business and economic columnist for the Seattle Times. Nice to see you, John.
Hi, guys. I'm glad to be here.
So this study released by the AFL-CIO, what did it find when it comes to that pay gap between bosses and workers, or executives and employees, if you will?
Well, it's grown from, say, 50-1 in the 1950s and 60s to more than 300-some-odd-to-1. Executive pay was one of the major drivers behind the Great Recession, because these executives, especially in banking, were paid more to take more risks, to take on more leverage. And there was this incredibly naive moment when we were talking about a great reset that somehow the incentives would be changed, but they're not. And so it is wildly out of control, but the executives have the political power.
Is that gap growing exponentially larger since 2008?
It's grown pretty big. I mean, it's been growing exponentially larger since the 80s.
So what does this say about the U.S. economy overall?
Well, one could argue, as a new paper argues, that we are increasingly an oligarchy, that these very large companies and these highly concentrated industries and these extremely well-compensated CEOs have much more political power than any of us sitting in this room. And more than that, it is the complete breakdown of corporate governance, so that largely there's no connection between even the performance of a stock and the compensation that a CEO is given.
John Talton is with us. He's business columnist for the Seattle Times. John, moving on to a related but different topic, a new study has come out that finds that talent, capital, and companies are moving back into American cities. Are we talking about center cities?
Absolutely. This is one of the things that has changed since the Great Recession. It was probably starting before that. Younger people want to be in exciting cities. I mean, you know, they don't want to be in downtown Amarillo or downtown Phoenix, no offense to Phoenix, but they do want to be in a city like Seattle, and we're seeing this all over the country. You know, the Amazon urban campus in downtown Seattle is a national model. We see this in San Francisco, not without some pushback, but much of suburbia and exurbia is still deeply, deeply wounded from the Great Recession. The office parks that were so popular in the last part of the 20th century are not going to be popular again. If Microsoft were starting up now, it would be starting up in a city.
Well, let's talk specifically about Seattle. You mentioned Amazon, and I think that's probably the fastest growing big company that's located in Seattle. What does that mean specifically for both the neighborhood where it's located and the city at large?
Well, I happen to live and work in the neighborhood where it's located, and it's been utterly transformative. And as Rodden Judd of the Seattle Times has written, that, you know, we've lost this historic neighborhood of bowling trophy stores. and now it is this very dense neighborhood. Some of the spinoffs have been office space for Amazon vendors. There's also a big biomedical cluster in what Paul Allen has built. There are apartments going up and condos. It is the real wind under our wings in this. But, you know, downtown and the center city of Seattle is attracting more venture capital than the rest of the state. And again, this is going on nationally. It's where talented people want to be. It's also where empty nest baby boomers want to be.
So what I'm hearing is a very double-edged sword. On the one hand, we're theoretically seeing a business and occupations tax increase if businesses are locating within the city, but there is some net tax revenue coming into the city coffers, but then livability is harder because the cost of living rises.
Well, I wouldn't call it an equal double-edged sword, because livability rises when you have more people living in an area. So there's pressure on City Hall to try to make downtown and South Lake Union more livable and more accessible by transit. Living costs are rising and rents are rising, but we have to put that in the context of stagnant American wages. So when people say to me, the problem is affordable housing, I'm not sure that's really so. I think the problem is a lack of raises for most people.
And you mentioned that what we're seeing in Seattle is not mirrored in other parts of the state.
No, not at all. I mean, there's a little teeny tiny bit going on in Tacoma. Spokane has a nice downtown, but it's not attracting this kind of talent or startups.
In terms of, we have talked before about wages not keeping up and job creation not keeping up as well since 2008, but you have in the past maintained that still we have it pretty good here compared to the rest of the country.
We do. We have it pretty good here compared to the rest of the Northwest. But one of the problems we have is that every recession, our job creation keeps getting weaker. And it keeps getting longer to get back to even where we started out. So we're almost 5 years at the end of since the recovery started, quote unquote, and we still have not made up the jobs lost. We have in Seattle. We have not made it up in Washington State. And even in Seattle, we're only 35th out of 100 metro areas.
John Talton, you can read his column about business and economics in the Seattle Times, and he's a frequent guest here on The Record on KUOW. Thanks, John.
Thanks, Marcy.